Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Lily Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we have a returning guest champion all the way from Season 1, George Gross.
Hello, everybody.
George, you asked us to introduce you as a fan of film.
Yes.
A film fan.
You did it now, I guess.
That's right. George, I want to welcome you to what I guess is a milestone episode, in a sense. This is the last major regular X-Men-y X-Men episode content episode that we're going to do.
And to recap, what have you done?
That's a good question. We did every single episode of the X-Men animated series.
Right.
We did a few bizarro episodes of previous X-Men cartoons from like the 70s and 80s.
Oh, cool.
Like Pride of the X-Men, the aborted failed TV pilot. We also did A Fire Star Is Born, which is from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. We've done, and up to this point, every X-Men movie cinematically released. And this is the final one. Logan, from 2017, directed by James Mangold. So, you are here on the last regular episode of X-Men. How do you feel?
I feel really good. Very strong and excited about it. What was the last episode of X-Men date-wise?
Like the cartoon?
Yeah.
It was probably in 1997, if I had to guess. It could be 96. I should know the answer to this. I think it was 97, yeah.
That's interesting.
Right.
I like to think how... Because I think even we talked about this before, but just I remember like it being like the early mid-90s and being like, they could never do an X-Men movie now because the effects are so crazy.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they figured out the effects and here we are reviewing Logan.
You know, let's... before we get to Logan, you just raised an interesting question. Could they have done an X-Men movie in the 80s or early 90s?
I remember thinking deeply about it and thinking about, like, well, how would they just very simply, like, do, like... I probably had better examples, but Cyclops' eyes.
That's easy to do. They had laser beams.
That they had.
I know, but
they had a Terminator.
Could have done Star Wars style. Lasers.
Yeah.
That would have been fine.
A Cyclops could have been done. I think we can go through every major X-Men, and I don't think it would have been beyond the special effects of the
80s. It would have been a different animal, is the thing.
I think there's just so much stuff.
I'm thinking about, like, Batman, the live action TV show, you know.
Well, that was the 60s.
That was the 60s, but, like, that's the level I would expect from an X-Men movie release that was done, like, that long ago before special effects had made significant jumps. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think there's, like, I think they just sort of, they knew that once they cracked the code in CGI, then it just opens up completely, and it's just so much money. Like, think about, like, Terminator.
Right.
Terminator 2 was, like, a huge budget thing, and
yes.
It all comes down to, like the skeleton thing, and like more importantly, like the morphine of the liquid nitrogen,
right?
And I think with any X-Men stuff, it's like they'd have to show each one of their powers.
Yeah,
because that's one of the main reasons people watch these things. And it's just overwhelming. I think they probably just decided to wait.
I think they would have given Wolverine more like rubber claws. I think it would have been something along the like they'd be cornier looking. They'd probably have to be in more faraway shots so they wouldn't be too close up all the time.
I just, you know, I remember just thinking, like, they could never show, like, the claws, like, coming out of the hand. Like,
yeah.
There's just a lot of things that would be so difficult and so important to, like, to have kids, like, have the, for them to enjoy it and have it be a special, unique thing for the reason to bring it to cinema, to bring it to film, you sort of want to see it happen.
Right.
And I think they'd have to dedicate it. I just remember being like Storm, like there's so many things that like
Storm
would look cheesy.
But she flies mainly, right?
Flying,
she shoots wind. Wind they could do.
They did pretty good with
lightning
flying.
The 80s could definitely do. Lightning effects.
Yeah.
So I think Storm would be okay. You know, she'd be against like a green screen like Superman Christopher Reeves. It wouldn't look that great, but
then you think about, like, the Hulk. Like, we saw the Hulk. Did that look really great?
Well, that was Lou Ferrigno in green body makeup.
But, like, it's all about the transformations.
Right, yeah.
You know? But, yeah, it also was Lou Ferrigno in body makeup. Like, you want Hulk to be, like, a tank, not just, like, a bodybuilder.
I guess. No, you're right. I mean, I think they would have had to, like, pick and choose their heroes, probably, like, not have too many outrageous characters. Maybe you just don't even have Cyclops if that's too hard.
I definitely wish they did. I think if they started small and then built and then, like, let CGI happen around it, like, that would be, like, exciting to, like, finally be able to see these things. But I think I think it just would have been. I think they knew it was going to happen at one. Maybe Marvel was the holdout. Marvel's like, we don't want to do it.
Until no,
it
really that works. That that's not really true. I hate to be the resident nerd here, but I just recently reread The Secret History of Marvel Comics. I believe that's the title. I keep spacing on the title name, but basically, it's the entire history of Marvel, highlighting obviously Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, their lives, because Stan Lee recently passed, and I was interested in just checking out his life story again. But anyway, he moved to Hollywood in 1980 for the exclusive purpose of pitching Marvel properties to Hollywood studios.
Yeah.
And he spent a good 20 to 25 years failing to do this. Like, he really wanted to get Marvel movies going. Like, he had a few things that happened, like the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Loved it.
Great movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta say something about that movie. I swear to God, and I could totally be hallucinating it. George, maybe you can back me up. When they promoted that movie on TBS, when it was on TV, they promoted it as part of, like, it was literally called Senseless Violence Tuesdays.
Wow.
And right. It just doesn't sound, like, it doesn't seem like that could be real, this memory I have, but I swear to God.
I think that that sounds, that reminds me of, like, they did, like, movie popcorn nights on TBS, where they do, like, a double feature, and they got, like, the hosts, like, talking about it, and they would have these, like, grand themes and things like that. Like, I feel like,
we're just, you know, people what they want.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's such a great name for a dumb cable night movie segment, Senseless Violence Thursday. So they would show The Punisher and, like, who knows what else, like, Terminator 1 or something.
And did you use, like, TBS or USA?
It was either TBS or TNT.
TNT. Does that still exist?
I don't know.
Turner National Television? Who
knows? Turner Network.
TV in general.
Television. Yeah. I have no idea.
Is it an app is the question. Is there a TNT
app? It is
app?
Television.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, someone please reach out to me and let me know if Senseless Violence Thursdays was a real thing.
But I think the Punisher thing is a little bit telling, because they went through with that one because he doesn't have any powers.
Right. Yeah, that was easier to do. And I don't even think he had the skull shirt in the movie, which is, like, could have been the easiest thing. It's not like, it's one thing, like, you're doing a cheap Spider-Man TV show like they did in the 70s. And it's really crappy looking. He's got literally have suction cups on his hands. But it's another thing to do a Punisher movie where all he does is shoot guns, which is nothing superhero-y, and he doesn't have the Punisher skull shirt.
You know? Do you think maybe that they were more interested in, at that time, in adapting it to the film audience rather than bringing on the comic audience?
I have no idea. I don't know what they were thinking when it comes to that stuff.
That's all I can imagine, because if they wanted to get the comic book audience, they would have put the shirt on. And they would have, like, have it been more like Marvel in other ways, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think probably the way they pitched it to the studios was like, hey, we'll use this great idea, this great character, this cinematic character,
yeah,
and premise or whatever, and adapt it for film audiences.
Right.
And they just sort of, that's a big part of
it. And Marvel had, like, zero cachet in Hollywood in that era, too. Nobody in Hollywood took it seriously as anything beyond a kiddie franchise. You know, like,
well, Superman, though.
Yeah, but I feel like Superman had a real cultural legitimacy in the greater pop culture zeitgeist, to use a bunch of buzzwords, you know, like, forever. Mm-hmm. Like, Superman, I feel like whoever was in Hollywood probably grew up with Superman in that year in the late 70s. They can understand Superman, and even Batman, which took 10 years later, Batman, to an extent, so he even took longer. But Marvel, though, was still relatively... had to be a child of the 60s to even be part of the first wave. And how many of those kids were still, like, hardcore Marvel fans into their, like, young adulthood? And how many of them were working in Hollywood with real power?
But also the themes that are treated in Marvel are totally different. The things, I mean, that even come up in the, like, X-Men TAS stuff. It's about, like, racism and changing culture and, like, things that are a little more in-depth.
Right. Superman is,
nationalism, America, and, like, that's kind of where it ends, you know?
And then, like, Batman's just the vigilante...
It's like a noir idea.
Easier to understand.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Marvel's a little far out there. I mean, it was ahead of its time. Like, that's the overall, like, story of Marvel, that it was kind of ahead of its time with its content, like, both in its presentation, where you need the CGI, and, like, in its, like, general base idea, which is a lot about, like, what you said, social, like, issues and, like, intense interpersonal inner monologues and things. So, Anyway, I don't know what kind of tangent we were off on there, but Stan Lee was in Hollywood trying to pitch up. He actually wanted to, interesting, he wanted to do Ant-Man. He was obsessed with getting Hollywood to make Ant-Man.
He thought that was, like, approachable.
Yeah, he thought that was, like, going to be the greatest movie ever made.
Probably because of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
That's right, yeah, and that might have been a big deal, you know, a big part of it. Spider-Man, was always going to be too hard to do in the 80s or 90s. It would never look good. You needed the CGI to have him swing.
I think there's all these little things that you don't think would be difficult. Like, right. I think there was also something about, like I know when I first saw X-Men 1, yeah. I think it was 1, it might have even been 2.
1999.
Like, well, 2 is when Wolverine actually stabbed somebody.
Right.
Was that 1 or 2?
Well, I think he stabbed people in both movies.
But I mean, but when...
Oh, in 2, yeah, he's full on stabbed a man.
In the kitchen.
Yeah,
yes, 2. And I was like, whoa, like the Ninja Turtles, with, like, Leonardo never really used his sword. Like,
yeah.
You never really saw that.
He does cut Shredder at the end of Ninja Turtles 1.
But it's like a cut. Briefly, it's not like stab or something. I don't know.
I always say that because we just rewatched it last week.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Very New York.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Actually, extremely Marvel-y, that movie. Like, if you watch it now, like, a lot of the shit in Marvel movies was done in that Teenage Ninja Turtles movie. Mm-hmm. Like, New York setting. Like, a gritty characters that are also funny. Like, it had a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. Like, there's a lot going on in that Ninja Turtles movie. A little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
I remember I had a little screening of it myself. 10 years ago.
10 years. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, it was like, honestly, the ending kind of like dragged me a bit on Ninja Turtles.
I think that's something about all of them sets for me. Up great, yeah. Is that they have this, like, they get, Logan's a great example of it. Scott, like, it has so many, like, uniquenesses and unique elements that make it so great or whatever, but at the end of the day, it's still sort of meant to be in this structure.
Right.
Yeah. And
this one's a little better, though, than the standard Marvel structure.
Definitely.
I think it's a better movie in general. Like, it was really good. Tell me, what's your, like, had you seen Logan before we gave you this task?
Yeah, I saw Logan in theaters.
Yeah, so as should we.
Logan, Deadpool, Black Panther, and I didn't watch all of Wonder Woman, but these are all movies where it's like, no, you gotta see this one, because this is the one
right.
that's, like, better yeah. than the Marvel ones.
You're right, it was like this, in that year, 2017, 2018, there's a lot of the, like, oh, superhero movies are a little, like, better or cooler now, mm-hmm. but I think there's, like, an... Like, what you're suggesting, I think, is that this idea is like, nah, not really. You know, like, Black Panther was a cool movie, but if you sit back and rewatch Black Panther, it's just, like, the same as the other ones, like, more or less. And a little boring in stretches, and a little underbaked at times with the CGI.
Yeah.
So, and I think same thing with Wonder Woman. It was like, oh, great, like, they finally did a DC character justice again. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like a mediocre superhero movie. It's not like it was so revolutionary.
I watched the first 10 minutes of Wonder Woman. I was like, I don't think so. But then the Black Panther one, the CGI was like distractingly bad.
Especially at the end, yeah.
And yeah. I also thought that, I don't know, it's just, like, I think all of these things serve a purpose, and they're doing their job, but I don't think it really, I think...
A lot of hype for this.
Like, as a film fan.
Yeah.
they all have like a lot of interesting things going on, but the backbone is an escapism,
right?
Because they're extraordinary people,
right?
Beyond like Patton, you know what I mean?
Like General Patton.
General Patton is an extraordinary person, but like he's in the end of the day, he's still a person,
right? Yeah.
But like Wolverine, in the end, has got his struggles that are like, oh, symbolically, like, oh, I guess I could sort of like think that like, oh, I'm sort of like him, but I think for the most part it's sort of an escapism.
Yeah, definitely. You know?
And it's like, it's a fantasy, and it's...
Yeah.
And they do so many cool things, and Deadpool does too, but...
I think the fantasy of Logan is like, hey, we've made a good Wolverine movie. Like, that's like... The, yeah. Like, beyond that, it's yeah. like not too much, like... It doesn't have too much to say, I don't think.
Well, it tries. It's got, like, Professor X's, like, yeah. dementia, and that, like,
right. which is
like,
interesting.
Close to home, yeah. like,
It has, like, a lot of weirdly relevant issues to, like, even more relevant than it came out in 2017 with a lot of stuff going on at the border, like, border yeah. security and the government, like, going after oppressed people, you know, very, like, movie, like, Trumpian movie in a lot of ways.
Well, that also goes to show that, like, a lot of the issues that we're dealing with now that are so heightened and huge are not necessarily new issues. as well.
That's true too. Yeah. Yeah. So this movie, it cost approximately $97 to $127 million to produce. That's what Wikipedia says. I don't know.
Depends on catering.
It made $619 million at the box office. I guess that qualifies as an enormous hit.
It's probably domestic too.
I don't know. I think it's like grand total, because I don't think Wikipedia would just have domestic.
They tend to.
Oh, okay. Because
there's a thing about film where it's like, if you do well domestically, it's like amazing, because internationally you almost usually make up your money if it's like a regular sized movie.
Well, either way, it was a huge hit. It was a huge critical hit. It got nominated for an Oscar, believe it or not.
For what?
I think best screenplay.
Ugh.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong about what the Oscar was. It was either best screenplay or best like supporting actor. I don't think Patrick Stewart got the Oscar nomination
for supporting actor.
He didn't. No,
I think this is worth a Google.
Okay, Sonia,
right?
Someone Google it. I'll keep it. Yapping here. Directed by James Mangold, he directed the previous Wolverine movie, The Wolverine, which we discussed, Sonia.
Oh, I didn't know.
Which is kind of surprising, because that movie was good. It was like good for an X-Men movie, but I wouldn't say it was good for a movie.
Yeah, no.
So this movie's a huge step up in quality.
Uh-huh.
And James Mangold, I believe, had a big hand in writing, and he directed it, obviously. So this is, like, his vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, it's, like, it's better than a comic book movie, I would say. I'm not saying it's, like, a great movie, but it's a very fine cinematic experience. You know, obviously one of the best X-Men movies, if not the best, just from a technical standpoint of pathos and, you know,
for me, this one held up the best, since we've rewatched all of them in the last like couple of months. This one,
thank God we're at the end here.
It's been a little tough, but also enjoyable. But this was the most enjoyable to rewatch.
It was a nice journey. How did you feel just watching it in general?
I feel it was enjoyable to rewatch again, and a little bit better on the replay. But then once I think for me, once the Shadow character comes in, then I get a little bit like less interested.
Shadow character?
Like the evil version of
Wolverine. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it falls into, like...
I was genuinely surprised when I saw in the movies that they had, like, oh, he has to fight the younger version of himself. I was like, that's a clever idea. But then, like, it at the same time, when you step back, I think it's, like, corny.
What? Not a clever idea.
Really? Yeah.
Like, this is, like, 100% fan service to all of the people who've been playing, like, those X-Men versus X-Men video games all these years, and be like, I'm going to pit Wolverine against himself,
okay,
and wonder who's going to win. Yeah. Like,
maybe I was just surprised when I wasn't expecting, like, Hugh Jackman to have you know, another Marvel movie where a character de-aged.
Yeah.
With the digital, like, cleaning up the face and things.
Uh-huh.
I was just kind of maybe taken surprise, but I think it is corny in a sense.
I was taken surprise. I definitely just didn't know. I remember the first time I just didn't know what was going on. I was like, is that him? I was like, I didn't really get what was going on. I was lost as whoever was getting attacked at the moment.
Right.
Yeah. But on top of it, the guy has no character.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's like, it's actually a big missed opportunity. It could have been a better movie if the clone of Wolverine had something going on, mm-hmm, his own tortured psyche or sense of self and motivation.
He's just a Terminator, kind
of. Right, yeah. He's just a mindless Terminator. And in the end, it's like not that interesting that he's even a threat to all the characters.
But they have to make it okay that he's like dead and gone at the end, right? Like, because for all the killing and goriness and stuff in this movie, for the most part, it happens to people that are like, quote-unquote, bad people and deserve what they're getting. And, mm-hmm, like, there's a whole scene about that between Logan and the little girl, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she can live with the killing that she's done, even though she's, like, a kid and should be traumatized by it. She's like, oh, but they were all bad people. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, well.
You're gonna have to live with that anyway.
I also don't like that simplicity of life.
Right.
That, like, it's so easy to kill people who are, like, bad people, and then you're like, well,
but they also have,
I don't really know his life.
Right. Like, he might have a wife and
I know.
Kids and
yeah.
parents.
But that's an interesting, like, movies have changed in general when it comes to killing. I think forever you would kill a bad guy in a movie and never like question Luke Skywalker's purity or like humanity when he shot endless amounts of stormtroopers and then nuked an entire military station with a million people on it.
That was the whole thing with the new Star Wars cast, though, right? Where like Finn is the stormtrooper and he takes off the mask, and that's the first time you, as a viewer, are confronted with, oh, stormtroopers are people too,
right?
And that was like a big deal. So, anyway, I feel like they had to give Logan's clone like nothing going on so that they could still be justified in like moving their plot forward in that way.
I think it would have been a way more interesting movie if that clone had something going on, and then you could have even ended it like very vaguely. Does the clone live or die? Does Wolverine live on as a younger person? Mm-hmm. And then that's perfectly in line with Marvel Comics in a sense, like characters never really die.
Yeah.
You know, etc. I mean, like, I'm not saying I wish this character had lived because it's pointless.
Right.
But it's like it was kind of a bit missed opportunity to have the clone of Wolverine just exist as a prop.
I think I see both sides of it because I think it did seem sort of just like, okay, like he's an added element that he's only adding like a physical conflict. Like he's not really adding any other beast. Like, obviously they got to kill this guy. Like, yeah. Obviously that's all he does. He's just. But at the same time, it being a character story about Logan, that's like his embodiment of just his rage.
Right.
Which he like grapples with throughout the whole movie. And that's like the physical embodiment of that. And I think for me, like just in watching a movie, like it gets to the point where it's like, okay, they're just like adding plot devices to make it like interesting and like exciting. But like,
right.
It's just, it's not going to be a kind of movie where you actually sort of try to like find the depth in it without making a physical embodiment of it.
That's a good point.
But nobody wants, that's not like, that's not what this genre is, though.
Yes, you're right. And it's kind of like, I don't even know why we're still talking about this minor part of the movie. Like, you know, the clone is even a big part of the movie.
But it should be a big part of the
movie,
kind of.
Yeah, you're right.
That's really interesting.
Well, his other clone is, the female clone of him, the daughter is a huge, right.
That's a good
point.
So
that's what I'm saying. They already cover that ground in a way with the Daphne Keen, I believe is her name. She plays Laura, X-23.
She was great.
Yeah, she's an unbelievable child actress. Yeah. So it's like, it's like redundant to have the Hugh Jackman clone.
Well, again, I was saying a little bit before, but like, a lot of film screenwriting is based off of Carl Jung's, like, there's the shadow figure, there's the anima figure, and there's the self figure, and in this movie, Wolverine is very much just that shadow self. Mm-hmm. And then the anima is this daughter who he like has to like figure out how to be like vulnerable for and actually help and like, you know, become the hero that he's meant to be on a personal level. And he sort of he like approaches that conflict resolution at his last moment where he's like, oh, this is what it feels like or whatever.
Right.
And then like Professor X, the self, like the actual embodiment of what he thinks is like what he sort of is.
Right.
What he stands for.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And those are all
so
like
it's all this like huge psychological, I don't know what the right word is, but it's like this huge psychological framework is the whole movie. It's this character. It's a character
definitely.
Study.
It's definitely a character. Like one thing to do, like I decided not to take notes just to appreciate the movie again so I could talk about it. But one thing that would be good is just to like sit down and like watch it and just try to figure out how all the dimensions that you see throughout this guy, like he like. In the very beginning, he, like, is, like, in the trunk of the car, and he, like, gets out, and you wonder how this person who you never met, or maybe you know Wolverine, but if you haven't, like, how is he going to react to this?
They're almost presenting him as if he's a new character in this movie, too, in a way,
And it's just sort of, like, but presented as a character study.
Right.
Like, we're like, what's going on? Who is he? Or whatever, and he gets out, and he's more interested in, like, not hurting the car.
Right.
It's like, please don't hurt my, like, I'm like a working class person.
And he also has a sense too, it's like, I don't want trouble. I don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm tired of killing and getting into fights in general.
Yeah. And at that point too, he's not ready to die though.
Right.
Yeah. Later in the movie, he's like ready to die when like the farmer guy is about to shoot him.
Yeah.
But at this point, he like decides to like bring on his rage character and then destroys them. Like he's like down like this and like they're about to shoot his head.
Yeah.
And he, like, instead of just being, like, later in the movie, just, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But at that point, he still, like, has a lust for life or, like, a need for duty.
Right. Yeah.
And, just to go through and just sort of have these contradictory elements, and I think the movie is a great Marvel character study of, like, the character of Wolverine.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've established some good frameworks of discussion points. So I'll do what I normally do. I'll go through the plot here, and we'll just keep expanding or going off, you know, on whatever that comes to our mind. So the movie, as you said, opens. He's sleeping in the trunk of his car. I guess he's in El Paso, Texas.
Yeah.
And he is now a limo driver. The year is 2029, which is an interesting futuristic year.
I believe that's also Judgment Day in Terminator 2.
Really?
I believe so. Wait, no, 2029 is 1997, but there's something about 2029 and something.
Hmm. Okay. Well, someone...
I'm going to Google that, too.
Okay, yeah. Google that as well.
Oh, did you find out what the nomination was?
He was nominated for Adapted Screenplay.
Wow, there you go. I guess adapted from the comic book Old Man Logan.
I honestly was thinking one thing that would be fun to do is watch Copland.
I want to see Copland.
Great movie.
Yeah, I saw it once when
it came
out.
I bet there's a certain level of parallel in terms of, like, you know, the because Sylvester Stallone is, like, a beaten-down cop.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he has his own allegiances. He's not as nearly as strong as Wolverine or whatever, but, like, I'm sure he's the same sort of similar, like, shadow self.
I could have played Wolverine. Yeah, I can imagine Stallone saying that to himself at one point.
Could have been Wolverine. Oh, he definitely thought he could have been anything.
It would have been cool, yeah.
I assume I'd be Professor X.
I'm kind of intellectual. Was it? Oh,
this is a good sign.
2029, Terminator 2. You're going to Google that. So, I think it's like, it's one of the most semi-realistic takes on the 21st century future as far as movies goes. Like, you know, any movie from the 70s, 80s, 90s that shows the future, like, let's use Back to Future 2 as a classic example. It's 2015.
It is a 2029.
Okay, oh, there you go. Another Terminator connection to the X-Men universe. But anyway, like, so Back to the Future 2015, it's like flying cars, outrageous technology. This is the first movie where it's a more plausible future that's, you know,
yeah.
It's like, it's more like down, it's more realistic looking. And I find that
love that. I think the only real technological thing that sort of stands out is the drone trucks.
Right. Yeah. Right?
Is there really anything else that's like,
I don't know.
Actually, it's funny. There's a scene like towards the end where they're using flying drones. And I remember, I mean, it came out like last year, but I remember watching it being like, that would never happen.
Well, they had what did you think? You didn't think that they had spy flying drones?
I guess I did, but, like, for some reason, like, just over this summer, I started, like, seeing them around public parks or, like, knowing people that owned them, and it became, for me anyway, that's when it became mainstream, and I guess that hadn't, like, happened yet at the point that I had seen this movie I was watching. I don't think so.
I remember I read this book, I forget what it was called, but throughout the whole thing, they were talking about how everyone's addicted to their apparatuses, and they're all, like, and when someone walks into a restaurant or a bar or whatever, they could see that that person was there because of the apparatus, and, like, obviously about phones, and it was like a year before. Like literally, I was like, "There's no way people can be that."
It was like 2006 or something. Yeah, like right before
it was just before.
We're all dumb. The tech, the future tech in this movie is the well, besides all the cloning, it's the body prostheses that the Reavers wear, metal arms that all the bad guys have.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's quite.
That's pretty advanced.
Right, yeah. That's like some more Terminator shit there. Yeah,
that's very Terminator shit. Honestly, I remember we talked about the early cartoon stuff, and, like, I think Terminator, and I've seen it other places since, but Terminator had a huge impact on a lot of, like, things.
Definitely. Dystopian sci-fi future stuff, like, the X-Men play in that arena a lot, so they either...
Yeah.
One's influenced by the other, or they share, you know, some kind of commingling.
But I remember just that first X-Men cartoon pilot episode. There's so many parallels pulled directly from Terminator.
Right.
Like,
all the robots and...
Even just, like, the trench coat. And, like, there's just a lot of, like, element. Like, I remember Jubilee's relationship with her adopted parents.
Right, yeah.
Like, there's just so many things
You're
like
absolutely
that.
Right, yeah.
And it's all over the place. And I think it also has a lot to do with, like, the fact, like, back, it was still sort of the culture to, like, see a movie and then go home and you don't have access to it or anything. Like, it's just sort of like, this movie did really well, we'll pull as many things out of it, and people won't necessarily remember.
Right,
But these things are really, like, you know, it's really good to have, like, an adopted child who doesn't get along with their, like, parents like that. Like, it's an interesting conflict and a good place to start with. Because she was also not from a comic book, right?
Jubilee? No, she was. Yeah.
She was.
Yeah. She was introduced like a few years before the cartoon came out. Mm. So she was a relatively new character at the time.
Right.
But anyway, I just want to talk about a few nerdier details.
Please.
Before we blast forward. So Days of Future Past, it takes place in the year 2023. And that movie's about a dystopian future ruled by robots, essentially. That movie ends on a happy ending because Wolverine travels back in time to the 70s and he fixes the present, which... in this case is 2023. He wakes up, all the X-Men are alive from the first movie, Famke Janssen and Cyclops, James Marsden, and and Kelsey Grammer's Beast is alive. Like, they're all the characters you know and love from the original trilogy are saved, and they live happily in a blissful future.
I forgot Frasier played Beast.
Yeah,
right. I know. So, like, that movie, 2023, happy ending, all the X-Men are there. This movie's only 6 years, and by the way, in this future time in 2023, Wolverine still looks totally, like, fairly fit. He's not hobbling around like he is in this movie. In this movie, he has a limp for some reason. He's poisoned by his own adamantium. He looks way older and just, like, broken down.
Yeah, really hard years.
Yeah, right, because in Days of Future Past, he was totally fine. He's super cut, handsome, you know. Yeah. He had a little bit of gray in his hair, but outside of that, he was the Wolverine we know and love. So in this movie, he's way more... 6 years did a lot to him.
Right.
Way more broken down.
Well, all his friends died at the X-Men.
Right, well, yeah.
We talk about...
Yeah, that's like the big reveal, is that Professor X kills all these X-Men that were just saved in two movies ago.
Right.
Oops. And also, what else was I going to say? We calculated Wolverine's approximate age, at least in the movie universe. So we figure he fought in the Civil War, so he probably would have been in his 20s. So that puts him, and that's the 1860s, so he must have been born around 1840. So 1840 to 2029 is like 190 years old. So even if you have super healing factor, I imagine by then it would start to, like, fail at some point. It can't keep you alive forever.
That's why, honestly, I think even as a kid, Wolverine was my favorite, because I love that simplicity of a superpower.
Yeah.
Like, Batman was awesome because he didn't have anything, but, like, Wolverine, like, you see Wolverine, you're like, oh, his power is his claws. But then, like, you learn the only reason he has those claws is because he has this healing power.
Right.
And, like, that's a very human power.
Right, and a big wish fulfillment fantasy with, like, a dark edge to it. Because with Wolverine, he's kind of cursed by the healing power. Because he lives, like, all his people he loves, they either die or something tragic happens to them. And he just keeps living.
Have you ever seen Ninja Scroll?
No, I haven't. Tell me what Ninja Scroll is.
It's an anime, and I haven't seen a lot of anime, but this is one that we had as a kid or whatever, and it's really great. I highly recommend it. It's along the lines of Akira, but it takes place in, like, feudal Japan, and there are, like, you know, plenty of, like, superpower kind of characters, but one of them, the main bad guy, he kind of has, like, a healing power, like Wolverine.
Yeah.
And he just sort of, like, you shoot him, you cut his head off or whatever, he, like, comes back to life. And so he gets on this boat filled with gold and, like, tries to get away or something. I don't know exactly what it is.
That's the dream.
And to kill him, they...
That's almost the plot of this movie, by the way. Getting a boat with some gold.
Well, boats, house structures and boats in the sea are very important in your dreams.
Mm.
And most stories come from dreams. But in this, they melt all the gold on the boat and crash the boat, and so he is encased in gold.
Ooh.
And then sinks to the bottom of the ocean, like, in a gold mold.
Yeah.
And forever, he'll just, like, die and come back to life, encased in the gold.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah.
It's a great, great little,
unique torture.
That's how Wolverine could have gone.
Right, yeah. So it's like living forever is like has a downside because it means you can't die. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that in a lot of different
one
media.
Day at a time, though, you know?
But in this movie, maybe in a way he's blessed because the adamantium skeleton's poisoning him, as he says.
Yeah, so, he's not complaining now.
Right, yeah.
Or I guess he is complaining.
I don't know what his...
He's brooding.
He's conflicted.
I think he's just had enough. There's a scene where he's smashing the truck that he buys because it breaks down, and he's just screaming and cursing, and it's actually a pretty nice character moment because he just buried Professor X, and that was actually a pretty sad scene. Mm. And it's just that how many other Professor X's in his life has he buried though along the way in 190 years? A lot. So he's probably just tired of, like, all this feeling and everything. Mm-hmm. So anyway, 190 years old, he's... Professor X killed all the other X-Men, which is revealed later, but whatever. He has Professor X shacked up in some kind of weird smelting plant that's abandoned across the Mexico border. He's driving he's a limo driver to pay the bills. He also has Caliban, Stephen Merchant, a reboot of this character from just one movie. Because they had a Caliban was a character in X-Men Apocalypse, the previous one, played by, is like a minor part played by not a star actor like Stephen Merchant is. So it's kind of weird how they reuse that character.
And his power is that he can, like, sense other mutants.
Yeah, he can detect other mutants. Tracker. Right. Yeah. A pretty interesting casting and role. You know, Stephen Merchant obviously knows a British comedian. Yeah. And here he is in, like, a kind of like a sad, a humorous role, but, like, has a lot of pathos to it as well.
He did very well.
Right. And then, and they're looking after, how old does Patrick Stewart say he is in this movie? 98? 90. No, I think he's older. I think he says he's 98 years old.
Alright.
Anyway, Patrick Stewart is back, which is great. I love Patrick Stewart.
He's great.
He, in, like, really the best performance of Professor X in the entire series that he gives. Well, he's been consistently great throughout all the movies. There's no real way to, like, nitpick that. But this one's singularly unique as a performance.
Yeah.
He's not playing the superhero Professor X. He's playing an archetype of an elderly man battling some form of dementia or mental decay.
Wasn't this very much his, like, my last superhero movie thing or something?
No, I don't think. He's coming back as Picard in a new Star Trek.
I heard that, but I think more than this being the last Wolverine movie, it was a big thing about him being the last Professor X thing because of the drama that he put into his acting or something.
I think that might be, I think I've read multiple things, so I'll say that's probably true, and I don't think he's coming back as Professor X in any capacity, but I think, like, I've read stuff too where he's like, yeah, I'll come on Legion and play Professor X again, you know, the FX series. So he's not, I don't think he's, like, closed-minded. I don't think he expected to play this character again multiple times. Mm-hmm. After X-Men 3, they killed him. Right. I don't think he expected to come back, and then he's already back in X-Men Wolverine Origins in a crappy CGI role. He didn't expect to come back again for X-Men Days of Future Past. He said he was really delighted that they asked him and Ian McKellen, who's his best friend, to reprise their role. So I think he's, like, game for anything. He's back his as Picard. Friend. Yeah. Like, he's got nothing to do. I mean, Patrick Stewart's, like, such an incredible actor that, like, has never really... He should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. Just, it should have been, like, a Sean Connery for, what was that movie? In The Untouchables. Which, if you think about it, that was not Sean Connery's best performance, but they owed him an Oscar. You know?
Well, I think there's one thing that people have to remember is that the Oscars really aren't necessarily focused on, like, whatever is the best kind of thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is, give him a bullshit Oscar for Logan. Yeah. You know, he deserves one for all the other shit he's done in his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, this is a perfect opportunity. Give him Best Supporting Actor, you know, Patrick Stewart. Like, he's of Hollywood's greatest actors.
And I bet, honestly, I think that relationship and that character probably struck well with real people in real ways more than most any other thing.
That's absolutely true, right?
In the X-Men
universe. Right, I mean, he'll never be commended fully for his Macbeth that he did a million years ago, whatever, you know, Shakespearean parts. That
you're
he...
like, what a douchebag.
Yeah. He'll be remembered as Picard and Professor.
That's the whole Alec Guinness thing, right?
Well, explain that to me. Because he was remembered for Star Wars instead of all those amazing movies he did.
And in theater and all sorts of things.
Right.
And well, in his mind, like, everyone at that time, like, Star Wars was just sort of this campy movie for a buck.
Right. He got points on Star Wars. And it made him rich, you know. Like, he was very pleased when it became a big hit.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway, so the situation is Patrick Stewart, Logan's trying to keep him alive. They're feeding him this medicine. Because he's having he can't control his powers anymore. So if they don't take these pills to repress his powers, then he causes this, like, mental disturbance that kills everybody in the immediate surrounding area.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, it's and very scary.
Yeah.
And, like, when you're watching it, you're very uncomfortable as well. Yeah.
I like that sound they used and the look. Like, with Stephen Merchant's character, outside of, like, just generosity, why was he there?
I don't know. I specifically was trying to see what his motivation was as a character. My only guess is that most of the mutants are dead, if not all of them, and Professor X, Logan, and Caliban are banding together as a community, like being the last surviving mutants. And that was something, a detail I picked up in this movie that I didn't catch when I first watched it, was how they got rid of mutants in the world. Mm-hmm. Is that the scientist...
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. The scientist said that he just found a way to genetically modify just basic, like, food and drink so that people just would no longer breed the X gene.
And she specifically said, like, breakfast cereals?
Yeah. The corn syrup was, like, that was the whole thing with the farmer. It made more sense.
Yeah.
But it connected me right to the beginning of like, they spent a long time showing the girl eating the cornflakes.
Right.
And it's just sort of like, it's a nice, it's a good, like, well-rounded thought.
Yeah, that's a nice sci-fi element they injected into this movie. So, that's cool. So anyway, what else is going to mental free? Oh, I was, another nerdy thing I was going to mention. In Days of Future Past, they introduced this MacGuffin, which I hated. That Beast invented a serum that he's injecting into Professor X that allows him to walk, but it limits, it turns off his powers.
Was it Frasier still?
No, it was Nicholas Holt this time. Frasier's just a cameo in that one. So I was like, they could have used more of that beast juice that he had. That would have been really helpful in this movie for Professor X, that he could walk around and not have his power at the same time. Oh,
backstory for me. I'm one of the few people who really liked that new Superman movie. Not the one after it, but the first one.
Man of Steel. Okay.
And I liked it because they were like... Well, for the same reason with that. Yeah. It's like, I as a film fan, representing
trademark
film fans, I like when they do rethink things without thinking too hard about connecting them to make a better story.
Right.
And so with the Superman one, I like that they really just like, the whole approach was like, here's this alien. Like, yeah. He was really just very much an alien.
Right.
And I never thought of Superman like that.
Yeah. That was a good element to it. Because they put it in a more realistic setting.
Yeah.
That was, like, the premise that... There's an element to that of, like, the military is, you know, investigating, like, an alien ship and how would the news media really respond and, you know, like, is he contaminated? That kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. So that was a good idea in that movie. I mean, there was...
People hated it, though.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, it's because the ending was... It was ridiculous. I mean, he destroys half the city and all his people die and he doesn't care. And Superman is all about saving people, and he notices when people die.
That's what it is. It's you. It's like it's failing your expectations.
But I just, there's a limit to I'm okay with my expectations being defied. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about superheroes, there's a limit to those expectations.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, that just when you just betray the character like wholeheartedly, then it's not Superman anymore. It's just another character. And I'm not against that, but when you dress up a character as Superman, I just can't help but tie him to fundamental principles that to me can't be crossed, and you're still telling me it's Superman.
I just saw it as an alien. And this guy is like so powerful, and it's like, well, if this guy was really that powerful, what would that look like?
Well, you know what you should do? You should purchase the first like 20 Superman issues from 1937, whatever year it came out, because that's what the comic's about, more or less. It's like a weird guy has emerged. Mm-hmm. He's an alien. They don't even explain his backstory that much, and he's way super violent too.
I saw the movie with my friend Mike and my cousin Blake, and my friend Mike.
Shout out to Mike and Blake.
Pretty much just like wanted to walk out halfway through, and he was the whole time, he was like, oh,
it's not Superman.
He just hated it so much. Yeah. And I asked him why, and he was, all the things that he was missing was just the funniness. All he wanted to see was like Clark Kent being goofy.
I like that. I miss that too. I think Superman's a stupider character.
Like, I just think it's like, to me, it's like, well, that's not this movie. Like, that's like another movie.
Right.
You know? Well, I'm also someone who like never hates on a sequel happening. It doesn't ruin. It never ruins the original to me. Right. The only case where that does happen actually, is Mel Gibson made Braveheart.
Yeah,
and then he made the Revolutionary War one.
Yeah,
and the Revolutionary War one was so bad, but it also like showed me how bad Braveheart was.
Yes,
because I loved Braveheart.
Yeah,
and then I saw this Revolutionary War one. I'm like, this is super cheesy. But it's a lot like Braveheart.
Yeah.
And then I rewatched Braveheart. I'm like, not for me anymore.
Wow.
So that's a sequel rune. I don't know if it's technically a sequel, but it kind of is. Yeah.
I like viewing all movies in that continuum of your own experience. You know what I mean? I think you can't subtract all these contexts from appreciating a movie, like what the actors are actually like in real life.
Right.
How they interact in the chemistry of this particular instance, what the year and time and of like the world is, because you might say, oh, that's dumb, but if you go back and watch classic cinema, it's like traveling through time.
Yes.
When you watch movies from the 1930s, it's amazing to see what America's like in like right before World War II breaks out, the type of movies they're making, even just seeing how the background extras act and
the relevancy.
Right. So that stuff like matter. It may not matter now. You might say it's dumb to like imagine like what Tom Cruise was like in 1997. But in the year 2097, when you watch a Tom Cruise movie, it's going to be fucking fascinating.
Everything's going to be like, this is what life's like. Yes. That's why The Room's so funny. Right. It's like, that's not life at all. And it's so funny to like see someone
Tommy
try. Wiseau,
But that's what makes it art history. And, you know, like that's the lens that you look at art through. Yeah. Art is a representation of your culture. So, you have to take everything into context.
I want to say about going back to Logan, I was surprised that I get it. It's an R-rated movie and Deadpool influenced this one in terms of the ultra violence and the cursing. And I'm fully on board with Wolverine cursing.
Self-awareness, I think, more than anything.
Too. That too. Yeah. There's a lot of meta-ness in this movie.
Yeah.
But I wonder, like Professor X curses a lot in this movie as well. I found that like not necessarily accurate. You made me self-conscious talking about Superman was like better as like not sticking true to the character.
Yeah.
But here it's still the same character Patrick Stewart's playing.
Yeah.
I don't know if Professor X is necessarily one to be like have such like a sailor's language. Yeah. You know.
Well,
it's fine. It doesn't detract from the movie in any way, but it stuck out to me a little bit.
It's a couple things.
I think he says motherfucker at some point. You know.
Part of it is like, you know, when people get older, they sort of go through changes,
right?
Too. Especially like at that age where it reverts to different ways. But I think a lot of this movie and a lot of that coming from Deadpool is like a conversation about how do we make it feel more unexpectedly real.
Right. I think you're right. Yeah. And Patrick Stewart dived deep. His part's all about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. His physicality and everything. And the way he looks shoddily. The fact that his hair's growing in the back of his head, so he's not like the bald comic book character, Professor X, like completely bald.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're showing that was a choice he was making previously, that he was shaving the remnants of his baldness.
That's funny, yeah.
Yeah, and here he's, like, a lot shabbier, and it's a wonderful part.
Really, it's humanizing, but it's interesting to think about that backwards, too. It's like, oh, he's been shaving that the whole time? Yeah. I just assumed his psychic powers didn't allow him to have hair like that.
Speaking of, like, minor character parts, moments that stuck out to me, one thing I didn't like, I thought Hugh Jackman is incredible in this part. It's his best performance.
Sure.
I think he's an interesting actor in the sense that I don't like him in much of anything besides playing Wolverine. There hasn't been too much that I've, like, found great by him. I mean, that might be unfair. I haven't seen all his work. But in general,
Prestige, he's good.
Yeah, he's good in Prestige. You're right. He's excellent in that. But anyway, that aside, this performance is great. It's very animalistic, humanistic, the grunting he makes is pretty interesting when he's slashing people in the head. I find that very, just like bizarrely physical in a satisfying and interesting way. But the one moment that really stuck out to me is negative. He's driving the women around that are on a bachelorette party,
right.
And they flash him. And they cut to him, like, smiling and laughing about it to show that, like, one, he's not gay. He still likes women. And two, he's a man, you know?
Yeah.
I thought, like, it's not true to what this character is. He's 190 fucking years old.
Yeah.
I don't think he would care about sex anymore. I think he'd be totally annoyed by these women.
I feel like he should have rolled his eyes at that moment.
Yes.
You know, that would have been more, like, true to form for him.
I felt like he was just like, I thought it was more of a nod to the life that he's created, like, for himself. Like, say it's the exact same choice as when he knows the border guy's name.
Yeah.
I think it's more about, like, he's just like, he's a limo driver. He experiences these kind of people, and it's refreshing to see someone having fun. I don't think it's about him being like, I'd like to hit that. I think it's more about him being like, I'm dealing with so much, you guys are having fun and you're reminding me that, like, this is something.
I definitely think you could read it that way. I just think that, I think it, to me, a 109-year-old character who's, at this point, he's at a desperate end of his life where he doesn't even necessarily want to be alive himself. He carries around an adamantium bullet in case he wants to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. So he's suicidal. So I just think that he's tired of fun. And, like, he wouldn't be interested in hooking up with a woman.
But I mean, like, it's not...
Like, he'd be asexual at this point. I don't think he'd have any, like, you know...
But the argument here is that it's not a sexual...
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
I also think it's like, he has a job.
Right.
Like, he runs, arguably, like, he's a smart guy, so he wants to run a successful company. And he can't be a jerk, or whatever.
Well, he's connected to humanity,
and it's not so much about like putting on a front of a kinder side. It's like I'm like smart enough to know that I have to allow that for this job, and it's almost patronizing. that he has to do that almost for the same reason that he knows the border guy. It's like,
right.
Like, this isn't really the life that I'm meant to live, but I'm going to do it right. Like, I'm going to, like, make sure that I can get the drugs that I need to get and, like, do all those things. And I think it's all part of it. I think,
I think that's fair. I think that's, so maybe my criticism was a bit, like, you know, it wasn't too fair.
Yeah, that is possible, but I read it the same way that you did.
It definitely stands out.
Smiles a little bit, I was like,
It's like, you know, they talk about in Red Letter Media a lot about a character having the case of the not gays, where a masculine character has to remind the audience that, like, hey, I really like chicks, I really like women, you know, in case you, because not all these movies have a female interest, but they have to, like, step aside just for a second to show that, like, oh, wow, she's hot.
Then I think in that sense, it's like doing a couple things. And I think if you don't like one of those things, then that's, like, valid.
But
I
think... It's a small moment.
Well, I think the other thing to talk about is just the choice to show boobs.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? R-rated movie. Yeah,
like you're like we're gonna go this. You're show to a lot of the audience. You just look like being like, oh, anything could happen.
Right. we discussed this on one of our recent podcasts, but modern nudity in movies is so less satisfying than what it was.
Oh, yeah.
When we were growing up.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's just because of the nature of the times where it was
100% about the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, especially, like, kids now, it's like, there's no way they're, like making, like, desperate copies of Basic Instinct.
Right, to, finding like, Playboys in the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You have no idea.
Yeah. I didn't grow up by a forest, so...
Forests were a big part of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think in every suburban town... I grew up in the suburb. In every suburban town, there was porn in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, there definitely was.
And kids would find it, and it would be a thing.
There's, like, a campfire, a bunch of empty beer cans, and just a couple... old porno mags.
And that shit was valuable. I mean, there was no... How else are we going to get that information? It was... So, that's like... So, I think in the 80s, when they have a nudity in an R-rated movie, I think they may have had it PG-13 movies. Well, PG-13 didn't even really exist in the 80s until Indiana Jones. But, I'm also a film fan. but, like, you know, like, it was more, like, fun and exciting to see some kind of nudity. They'd film it more interestingly and comedically and... There'd be a more, like, humanistic life to it, in a way.
I think the point is that the showing of the boobs was definitely a meta thing.
Yeah.
It was definitely being self-aware. It was letting you know, like, at what platform this movie's going to be playing at. And it's not so much about titillating.
Right.
And the choice, and then the other conversation is about, like, the conversation that Hugh Jackman had with the director about, like, how he's going to react and why.
Right.
You know... Maybe he could have made a different decision, but
there could have been a couple different.
I think it comes down to him being like these girls have no idea of the drama that is existing in the world. Certainly with his life,
how about that?
And he's going to allow it,
yeah,
and he's going to like appreciate it to a certain degree.
How about that moment in the limo montage, which I find really interesting, showing him working is when he's driving around the frat boys who are all shouting USA, USA.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up next. I was like, if there's going to be a moment where he smiles a little because everyone's having fun, like it could easily have been that.
Well, I think that's a dark moment because that's like some heavy political commentary. You know, but it's like very subtle and sly political commentary. Because he's working the Mexican border area.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think they show subtly in the background, there's just some, I don't know, if they're just Mexican people.
They definitely do.
Right, yeah. Like, and these jackasses are shouting USA, USA at the border. That's kind of fucked up. Yeah.
Well, it reminds me more of like, I don't know, I know nothing about El Paso, but that's, I assumed it was Tijuana at that point.
Mm, okay.
And that's sort of like, you know, people going down to party in Tijuana like that. But I don't know, it's not like they're specifically saying anything.
I don't think they're saying anything.
From Wolverine's perspective, it's like, this is what my life is now. Like, dragging these assholes around.
Right, yeah. You know? I think that's what makes the movie good, you're right, because it's not not even necessarily making a point politically. It's just, it's a time and a place, and there's like some interesting, like, accuracy, like some realism there.
This movie is excellent at layering in, like, you know, exposition is something that you can't just say, like, you can't just be like, well, I'm living here on the border of Mexico.
There's one huge exposition shitty point of this movie, which I'm interested in you as a film producer as well. Mm-hmm. Sorry, spoilers, George, you're a film producer. I didn't want to
let everyone know. I made Terminator
2. Yeah. So basically the plot of the movie, there's this nurse woman who's tracking down Wolverine. She needs his help.
Yeah.
She promises him 50 grand. He's trying to save up money to buy a boat to take Professor X out to sea to live in the ocean.
Right. So you can escape Stephen Merchant.
Right. Yeah. who can't live in the sun. He has to live below the decks. Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
And he wants to make dick cake.
Yeah, well.
I looked that up afterwards. I'm like, oh, it's pretty good. Spotted dick.
Is that, I wouldn't be surprised if that is a British
delicacy. It's a British
dish. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. It looks pretty good.
Okay.
It's like raisin raisins, cake.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, so this nurse, she's got.
Spotted dick for Christmas.
Trying to move
everybody,
past
I made spotted dick.
Spotted dick conversation. The nurse, she's helping Laura escape. She was in this fucked up facility where they're experimenting on mutants. The daughter is a clone of Wolverine, the female clone. But she has got an iPhone movie. Actually, it's a Sony phone, which is bizarre. Mm-hmm. And a pretty crappy looking smartphone for 2029. That's, that's a little detail I noticed. But anyway, she's like edited this entire like documentary.
Yeah.
So as far as exposition goes, that's like I think the weakest exposition point.
Well, there's one maybe I saw it originally in theaters years ago. One year ago,
2017.
Wow,
almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, almost two.
It feels like at least 2 years, but and then I watched it today because it wasn't available to rent until today. Mm. Did you know that? On iTunes?
No, really? Yeah. Oh, interesting.
So I was like, oh, jeez. So
it was on HBO Go for the longest time, and it just took it off.
Yeah. Okay, well.
No, it took it off, yeah.
But anyway, and I wasn't able to give it my full attention, but didn't she say that, like, she's like, my boyfriend's after me?
Really? She says that?
I'm pretty sure she refers to that guy as her boyfriend.
Donald Pierce? That's the character's name.
The Cajun guy?
Yeah, so that character, he's based off a character from the comics from the Hellfire Club. He's got a robotic arm, and this he's like been repurposed as the leader of the Reavers, which is another thing from Wolverine's comics where it's with Lady Deathstrike. It's not worth explaining. If you listen to the X-Men Task cartoon or watch the cartoon show, you know what we're talking about. But basically, he's been recombined into a new character. But you're saying they were boyfriend and girlfriend, the nurse? And
no, I think she was just saying that because she hadn't like fully exposed the whole plot to Wolverine yet. She was just trying to like
make it sense really quickly.
Yeah, exactly. She was just trying to like get it done fast so that he would like get them out of there before it was too late.
Either way, I missed that plot point. That's
yeah, she's like, my boyfriend's after him.
Or
after
wow.
The kid.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
But all right. Well, speaking of exposition, so she's somehow
I was like waiting for that sort of like
reveal.
Yeah, because like he's a prominent character. She's no longer a prominent character. I'm like, where is this gonna go? Yeah. Is he angry or?
I mean, he is angry, but
yeah, he's definitely an angry guy.
So the documentary she produces on her phone, which is quite intensive. It's really sad, though. I mean, what we see, what's going on with these children at the mutant facility. Mm-hmm. They're all clones of other mutants, I suppose, and they've been raised to be soldiers. And, I want to say about this subplot in general that I find it stupid that the scientist is surprised that you can't race, like, children to be agents of hate. Like, it's like, first of all, dude, like...
Rage, specifically.
Oh, right, yeah. It's like, you could easily raise children to be soldiers, you don't have to... you don't have to dehumanize them to do it. In fact, you humanize them, and then you just say, like, hey, we're the good guys. You have to help us kill the enemy, you know?
That's true.
It's not like you have to do anything.
The Hitler youth.
Yeah, you don't have to... You have to give them a sense of purpose, a sense of family, something to fight for, and just, like, a bullshit story about, like, this is why you have to kill these people, and the people will be easily brainwashed. Dehumanizing them, treating them like shit, will make them hate you. Right. You know, it's like the easiest... It's just so dumb that he doesn't realize that in general is a strategy. He's like, I realized it was better to clone you, Wolverine, directly and, you know, like, design your hate from scratch or something, your rage.
Yeah.
So that I thought was stupid.
Well, I definitely think it's maybe that's more of the political commentary that they're trying to make.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely, like, you teach hate, but you don't necessarily... The difference between hate and rage is interesting.
Right.
And that's... And Wolverine is, like... I think... the internal conflict for Wolverine is his dealing with his own rage.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, right. That's like a huge part of his character. Another huge part of his character, which was lacking in this movie, I guess he's lost his ability to smell, because he's got superhuman smelling. Mm. And he's taken by surprise many times in this film.
Is that why he's called Wolverine? Because Wolverine's been spelled real well.
No, I think it's just part of it. You know, his whole
animal. I just made that up, though. I bet they spell well, though.
George, if you watch X-Men Origins Wolverine, they explain the origin of his name, which is that his girlfriend, who is not really his girlfriend, she's a double agent, like, names him after the moon or something. Like, you remember Sonya?
There's some, like, Native American story she tells him.
Oh, I love the Native American story naming thing.
Yeah.
That's why I'm called George.
Really? What does that have to do with it? Never mind, let's go, let's move on. So anyway,
let's edit that one out.
All right. So his smelling doesn't work. The girl sneaks aboard his limo. He's taken by surprise. Professor X has been secretly communicating her with his powers somehow. He hasn't really been taking his pills all the time. He's still interested in helping young mutants. He's remembering what his cause in life is, to help to create more X-Men, essentially, you know, help mutants. Which is a nice little, like, summary of the entire X-Men story through the Professor X subplot. You know, it's like they're just boiling down the X-Men story to its essence, you know? A troubled child that needs protection from a world that's trying to destroy her.
A world that she doesn't fit in.
Right, yeah. So it's a great, like, that's another thing this movie does great. It's like it boils down the entire X-Men story to its essence. So anyway, we get our first, like, major, well, our second major fight sequence at Wolverine's house in Mexico, where Donald Pierce and all his Reaver people show up, super machismo dudes, all with metal arms and machine guns, and they're there to take the girl. And it's like, this movie is like really fucked up and disturbing in a lot of the sequences of gore, anyway. Yes. Like, the girl walks out with a decapitated head.
Yeah, that seems...
You see, like, the dangling entrails of the spine, you know, like...
I like that guy, too. He seemed like the actual, like, in, like, the perfect, like, in the 80s draw, like, a futuristic soldier person.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And really douchey.
Like a tank.
And, you
like,
really dislike him as a character. Yeah.
Reavers were also the villain in something else, right?
They were in Firefly, you're thinking of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're, like,
right.
Dehumanized monsters.
Yeah.
They start fighting all these dudes. Wolverine is, like, old and decrepit. His fighting's not quite as good, but he's still decapitating people. Which is, we haven't really talked about it yet. Like, it's finally, we see Wolverine decapitating people, blood flying everywhere.
Well, that's
ultra-violence that, like, the claws were never, up to this point, were never allowed to show.
So that is new to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's awesome. Because I thought that was really great. Like, to see how someone would really
get stabbed.
Use that, those claws.
Yeah.
Like to get stabbed is one thing, but, like, just to see someone move.
Yes.
Like, how would a soldier use those?
Yeah.
Like, how would, like, a real kung fu person use those?
And it's almost a shame because you get the broken down Wolverine in this movie. It's like, I kind of would have liked to see that in all the Wolverine movies when he was young and virile. Yeah.
But all of that is very, very CGI intensive.
Like, yeah, it is.
So huge.
Yeah, right. And in a way, that's kind of unsatisfying because it would maybe been better to have, like, a bunch of, like, you know, prop blood, like, squib blood and, like, what's a good, RoboCop-esque, like, squibs.
But when they go, like, into, like, the person's skull, it looks great. And, like,
yeah, it's satisfying. You finally get, like, this, like, how dangerous Wolverine's supposed to be, like, why he's a badass character instead of hinting at it and, like, and smoothing the edges, what they had to do with the other movies.
It's weird. I just remember, like, Ninja Turtles and stuff, like, Raphael couldn't really use his size.
Well, the foot soldiers were robots in the... Well, I'm talking the cartoon, anyway.
Yeah. But they never really used their weapons, you know?
Well, and in the second Ninja Turtles movie, they outright... I don't think they used them at all. Yeah. Like, for instance, Michelangelo wasn't allowed to use his nunchucks.
Really?
Because in the English release of Ninja Turtles 1, for whatever reason, it's illegal to show nunchuck use in movies. Don't ask me why. So they had to edit out all his use of nunchucks in the first movie. So in the second one, to get around that, he never even uses the nunchucks once in the movie. He uses, like, sausages, you know?
That's so crazy. Well, the nunchucks is, like, that's a pretty useless weapon unless you know how to, like, I don't know, it's so weird. Because Bruce Lee actually, like, basically introduced that to the world.
Yeah, nunchucks. Absolutely, yeah.
And it's just, like, kind of a weird weapon. Like, it only really works...
It's a cool,
like,
weapon.
Sort of like a sparring element.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it doesn't, like, tangle up very quickly.
Did you ever have toy nunchucks as a kid or real nunchucks?
Definitely.
And did you hurt yourself?
Loved them.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever got hurt.
Right. I mean, but you would, like, like, yeah, hit your balls.
Good at it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness!
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I remember having some kind of toy nunchucks and hitting myself in the crotch. Because you're trying to, like, swing them under your legs at some point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's like, where can I go with this?
And you hit them off the side of your temple and stuff. So, and you have any nunchucks or ninja weapons as a kid?
Never. Never had the pleasure.
There was a huge, speaking of ninjas and Ninja Scroll, there was a new, like, ninja diary was found recently.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Authenticated a lot of, like, things that people thought were fake about ninjas.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, I want to read it.
Send me a link to that. Later. Post it in the X-Men Test podcast Facebook group later.
Yeah, the real ninjas of the world.
Yeah. I need to know more about real ninjas. Another disturbing scene in this fight sequence that, like, took me off guard both times when I saw it in the theaters and we saw it now was when she gets harpooned in the chest, the little girl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was, like, I was like, that is just such bizarre imagery to see an 11-year-old child brutally gored. And, you know, obviously she's fine. She's got a super healing factor.
They're just trying to, like, take you to those places that, like, the realism places that you haven't really seen.
Yeah.
But they still stay true to it a lot because those kids at the end don't really get hurt.
No, you're right. Absolutely. You know? Only she gets, like, brutalized.
But I think that's also up front early.
It happens again later, though.
Really? She gets it, though.
She gets it, yeah.
Yeah. Has any other movie brutalized children to this extent? Like, I'm sure some horror movies... Right, Battle Royale. Excellent example. Yeah, probably a lot of movies like that. That's a good one.
Well, no, I think kids are.
It's like that's kind of taboo, right? To really.
Well, it's like the thing is, it's
no other kids have healing powers in movies.
But it's also like, you know, just even though this is rated R, like they know that like a certain like amount of kids really want to see this, and kids want to see this.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's like to be a kid. We watched The Shining yesterday, and it's like. I'm just so far beyond, really getting scared.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
But I watched The Shining when I was, like, 8 or 9, and I was terrified.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I can, like, barely even remember what that feels like.
You know what scared me? It was either RoboCop 2 or 3, where there's a bunch of criminal children. Mm-hmm. That, like, terrified me as a kid for some reason. I think they killed somebody or something.
Was there RoboCop 3?
Yeah, there was, yeah. It's probably
RoboCop's a great movie. Oh, I rewatched RoboCop 1 and 2 recently.
Yeah.
Like, it's like
RoboCop 1. Good? I've never seen it.
It's great.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. It's actually, I felt like RoboCop 1 is like really good in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it sort of like just becomes like, I gotta get over there and kill
really? Me. I love every second of RoboCop.
It's great. But
the ending is amazing. It's so satisfying.
But it's just, it's pure external conflict. It's
I just need to kill them. Yeah. It becomes like, it's like this to an extent.
But RoboCop 2 is like, never gets as good, but is always good.
Okay, all right. I know it's not Paul Verhoeven. That's probably why I never like went back.
It's not.
I don't think so. I don't think he ever did a sequel to anything.
Well, I liked it.
All right. Well, I'll have to check. I think that's on Amazon Prime too to watch.
For and they got a drug called Nuke, which I remember being like really that was really cool how they did it. But but in the movie I saw recently, and it's just like they just like put it here and they make a noise, and it's like, all right, not that creative.
It's like a Star Trek thing.
Yeah.
So this fight sequence ends, very violently, right? They get away. There's a lot of people are dead. Caliban's captured.
Cool, driving scenes.
Yes. Very like good.
Good chase.
Realistic in a way when he tries to ram the fence and it doesn't break.
Yeah. That's another
you
one.
Never, in movies, the fence always breaks, you know? Yeah. So this was cool.
Like, yeah.
But
and then he like went backwards and sort of used it to whip.
Yeah. you really spend a lot of time in this limo in this movie.
Well, that's the embodiment. He might as well be called the limo driver. Because he's like the caretaker. You know what I mean? He's the one who's like in charge of like keeping people comfortable.
It's like a hearse in a way.
It's very much like a hearse.
I want to say that like this movie, the epitome of Professor X not having his powers. And almost in every version of media we've seen Professor X, his powers are neutered in some way. Mm-hmm. Like because he's the most powerful guy. He could just tell everyone to stop. Mm-hmm. It would have been helpful here if he could just tell everyone to stop. You know, and walk away.
Yeah.
And they could have calmly just left.
Yeah, he's like, instead he's in the back, like, ooh.
Yeah, well, he's taking his pills. Wolverine keeps feeding him the pills.
Oh.
And I just love Patrick Stewart's acting when Wolverine puts the pills in his hands, he just automatically eats them. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I find that, it's something interesting there.
I love that, I don't want to jump ahead, but that Vegas scene is great.
Well, let's jump ahead. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has seen the movie, so,
They just go to Vegas.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not Vegas. It's Oklahoma City.
It's Oklahoma City.
I originally wrote down Vegas in my notes, and then later someone says it was an attack in Oklahoma City.
I totally thought it was Vegas.
Yeah.
I like it more that it's Oklahoma City, because Vegas seems like too big of a deal.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Right.
Out of their way.
What do you think of them?
But just sort of also like getting too much attention. Like yeah. Oklahoma City, they do that. No one cares. Right. You hear that,
yeah.
Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
what do you think of the fact that they're watching the movie Shane in the movie? Do you think that's like cool, or do you think that's like kind of like too on the nose with the themes and stuff?
I think that's great. I don't think there's
any... I think it works, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's
makes me want to see Shane. I have never seen it.
Yeah.
She quotes it later.
She quotes it at the end. It's the last line of the movie. It's just great.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It's a monologue that we see in the movie that we're watching.
Right.
She says, you can't break the mold.
New, like, dimension to her character. Like,
what is the quote?
It's like, you can't break the mold, like, you know, I am who a man's got to be a man. I can't believe I remember this, by the way. Like, I've never seen Shane. And she's like, but once you're branded as a killer, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's a brand that'll stick with you forever. There's nothing you can do about that. Like, I got to go on my way. Because right. The movie Shane's a lot like this movie. It's about a man who's, like, in a world of violence, and he's drawn back into it one last time. He doesn't really want to. Mm-hmm. And he's got to save all these people, like, on one last mission to, like, save a young child or something.
Well, it's interesting. I guess that's something that goes... To talk about that and to think about Wolverine is like most people think of Wolverine and they don't specifically think of the brand of him being a killer, you know,
right?
What I mean?
Yeah,
he's like a hero.
Yeah,
but like, and that's sort of what he's dealing with is just he sees himself as in a more realistic way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so that's an interesting point because in the comics, Wolverine is a character. He's a superhero because he's on the X-Men or he's on the Avengers sometimes. But really, he's always grumbling and brooding because of his. Like, mysterious past, where he's supposedly killed a lot of people, been involved in a lot of some shady shit, working for some evil, nefarious government forces and things like that. So it's always, like, the subtext or the background, but it's never, like, quite explicitly shown. In this movie, and the same thing with most of the movies, in this movie they're really getting into that in, a, like, a big bad way, which is, like, they're trying to, like, remind the audience, right, they're trying to remind the audience, it's like, this is why you think he's cool. Mm-hmm. It's like, you've always suspected that he's cool, and, like, known in your heart that he's cool, but you never, like, really saw why. And it's like they always had to remind the world that Wolverine's cool, whereas I feel like Batman, he just always is cool, because there's nothing to, like, conceal there.
Mm-hmm. But Batman also is always cool because he is always transparently good-hearted, even if, like, there's times when the media doesn't see him that way or the cops or whatever, but, like, you right. know in your heart, as a fan of Batman, like, he's good, like, capital G. Whereas Wolverine, it's like... He has these story arcs a lot of times where it's like he'll do the right thing, but it's not necessarily because his heart is in it or for the right reasons.
He's got his motivation's a little more complicated.
Right, but then like by the end of the story, he comes around and you see that he really was a good guy the whole time.
Yeah, right, yeah, he's always redeemed.
Over, you know, which
like,
happens here.
I'm very punk rock.
Right, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I love him in the cartoon. They really spell out what his character's all about. He's really, like, almost militantly for Professor X's cause of mutant rights.
Yeah.
Like, that's his motivation is, like, he quit being a secret agent because he wants to be on the X-Men because he's fighting for a cause he believes in. And he's, like, a real dedicated soldier to the cause.
I also feel like in the cartoon he got kind of an inferiority complex, though.
Yeah.
He's, like, very easily agitated.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's got... Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how they spell out his rage issues.
And, yeah.
He's got, like, his troubled, like, mental anguish.
Yeah.
He's, like, the way they present him in the cartoon and a lot of ways in the comics, he's like Professor X's patient to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like, you assume that maybe he's doing therapy with Professor X all the time.
Right. Psychologically unsound. But that's the one criticism of Hugh Jackman is his physicality, because Hugh Jackman is, like, 6 foot
something.
He's a little more handsome than what Wolverine's supposed to be.
Wolverine's supposed to be, like,
Danny DeVito.
Really tiny. Yeah, so he has,
weirdly,
like...
an original cast choice in the 80s version of the movie they wanted to make.
No way.
Yeah. No, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't Danny Vito, it was the guy who played Mario in the...
Oh, okay.
What's that? Roger Rabbit actor.
Yeah.
Well, I can't... None of us... He's a huge superstar.
He's an Australian actor, right?
Bizarrely... no, I think he's British.
Oh.
This is... Everyone at home's yelling.
I love Roger Rabbit. That's a great movie.
I've only seen the one time when I was a little kid.
Wow.
And I never rewatched it because I think I was scared.
It's a great movie.
All right, I gotta go back, yeah.
That's Super Mario Brothers, not so much.
Not so much.
John Leguizamo played Luigi. Yeah. Who played...
John Leguizamo is amazing in that movie.
No, but I'm just saying, like, who played... I tried to do, like, the jump word, you know.
It'll come.
Anyway, someone Google it. It's driving me crazy. You have to get his name out. I'm sorry. So, they're in Oklahoma City. They're watching Shane. Donald Pierce is on their trail. Professor X has one of his mental freakouts. That's where we learn that he killed all the X-Men. Like, that backstory is revealed there. Wolverine, in a really cool sequence, has to stop Professor X, inject him with the drug. And it's pretty, like, he's killing guys that are frozen, and that's, like, fucked up, too, in a weird way.
Wolverine played by Bob Hoskins?
Bob Hoskins was going to play Wolverine. There you go. It's insane.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
So the Oklahoma City scene, great. They have to hit the road again. They get a truck this time. They get some new clothes. It's fun. Oh, lots of great scenes with Laura, robbing a convenience store. And there's some casual robbery in this movie going around. It's an on-the-road movie. What were you about to say,
George? I was just thinking, it's fine, but it's, she's, like, very, she's ready to kill that guy.
At the store.
Yeah.
When she's eating the Pringles.
I think that's probably appropriate. She's born to be rage-filled.
Right, whatever, yeah. She's not adjusted.
She's also never been in a store before, so she didn't know how that's supposed to work.
Right. Yeah. And no one could stop her. Like, she's kind of amazing. Like wish to film a character in herself, too. She can't be stopped.
I guess she's trained to do so also, but just, I like I don't know which X, I guess it was the first X-Men movie. I don't know when, but they talk about how painful it is to bring out the
first one. Yeah, that's the best character moment in X-Men 1, in my opinion. When Rogue asks Wolverine, when they come out, do they hurt? Every time. It's like, wow, I never thought of that. I don't know if they ever said that in the comics, but that's great. Like, wow, it feels that pain. Amazing.
No, in the comics and stuff, it's like, it seemed as if it was like, there was like
the top of his hand.
You know when you get like an IV and they like hold it in there and they're like you make the IV and it's just there.
Well, honestly, that's a good point. In the original, when they were first drawing Wolverine, I don't think it was decided originally if the gloves had the claws in them. Like, it was not, it was revealed only later that the claws were part of him. Oh, wow. It was a big reveal in one of the issues when they finally show that it comes from his hands. Like, someone in the comic says, like, oh, wow, I thought they were in your gloves. He's like, nope, they're a part of me. But I think that's a reflection of the writers didn't know either yet.
Like, because it totally could be just like, that's the weapon he has.
Right, the glove weapon. Yeah. And so, I was always took excited. I don't know, maybe we could talk about this. In the movies, they very clearly establish that the claws come out of the middle part of his, like
between the knuckles.
Between the knuckles instead of the top of the hand, which I think in the comics, it's clearly definitely the top of the hand.
Yeah, especially because, like, originally they're bone claws. I always imagined them as extensions of, like, the bone that runs up to your knuckle.
Right.
Like those three middle ones.
Right, and he also had, like, the thing on his glove, the little rivets that they would come out of that would control it in a way.
Exactly.
But, George, film fan, I'm wondering, do you think it's a practical thing that they had to have the claws come out of the knuckles instead of the top of the hand? Like, do you think that
would... I think a lot of film screenwriting, or that's redundant, but a lot of screenwriting is just really trying to figure out how to simplify things and be more direct with it all. And if it's like, he's got this skeleton, and, like, it's like, why wouldn't they just come out there, really? Like, what's the added benefit of having it pop out
right,
or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's just, this is sort of simpler, it's more direct.
Yeah.
And in a way, it, like, kind of makes more sense.
I never thought they looked bad. You know, it's not like I'm annoyed that they
didn't
get it.
No, I'm with you. I don't remember how I felt, but I remember, like, noticing
the difference. That would be an interesting thing when they reboot the character with Disney. Like,
but isn't it amazing just, like, he, like, has those, I guess, that way or that way, but just amazing to be, like, you know,
nice,
like,
hands.
It's like, because it's also like a bone that goes all the way into his arms. It's really kind of an amazing weapon.
Yeah,
when it is what it is now.
Yeah,
know, fully thought out.
It's a great character. It's like a wonderful fantasy character that Len Wein created. You know, Chris Claremont helped like write. Just like, I don't know, he's one of those great like gifts to comic books.
Mm-hmm.
His costume. I think his costume looks great in the comic, you know, the comics and the cartoon as well. But, like, I was going to say, like, this mask is always a little weird, because it's like Batman, but...
I did always think it was funny that his, like, his hair...
Yeah. It matches the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
ongoing topic.
I mean, it's overall, Wolverine's a wonderful, like, iconic super character. And this movie's, like, the ultimate reflection of that in a lot of ways.
Well, I think simplicity of power is really helpful. And then the fact that the skeleton is very much a reflection of that simple power.
Yeah,
is really interesting.
I think the skeleton's like more interesting than even the claws. The fact that his bones can't break. It's one thing that he can heal any injury, but the fact that his bones can't break makes him even more unstoppable because he never has to heal the bones.
It's really just it is just complex enough.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, they wanted to give someone like like the metal. They wanted to have somebody who was like unbreakable,
right?
But they needed someone who could like heal.
It's like a suit of armor on the inside of your body,
yeah,
which is weird too.
But like they couldn't do it with just normal people. They couldn't just like have people have that without having that power.
Yeah, man, it's like it's so cool. I mean, I love Wolverine.
So Sabretooth has the same exact power, right?
He has the same healing power. Same he has similar animalistic powers, like smelling and, you know, like animal instincts. And
But he has the same.
He doesn't have the skeleton.
But he doesn't have
the
skeleton.
I thought he did as a kid, for over a decade, I thought he had adamantium too.
I did too.
But he never had it. I think at one point in the comics they were going to give it to him, but he was like some character.
He like broke out beforehand or something.
I don't know. It's a complicated story. Something was going to happen with him and the adamantium, but he didn't get it. He does have weird claws on his fingers.
Am I misremembering this? What movie is it in where he like almost gets it?
It's in Wolverine Origins with Lev Shriver.
Oh, plays him. That's right.
He wants it,
and he's like, well, like it's like a competition thing, right? Yeah. Like, oh, if Wolverine can handle it, I can definitely handle it. And the scientist
is like, we did the test. We know you wouldn't survive the process. It's like, really? He has the exact same power. Like, right. What kind of test do you know that? Like,
yeah.
All right. Anyway, back to this movie.
Willpower.
Yeah. So they get almost into a car accident on their way to their next location. Oh, by the way, they're trying to get to North Dakota to this place called Eden, right. Which is like, this is the other meta part of the movie. There's X-Men comics, which is pretty fun and cool.
Yeah.
Like, the X-Men have been mythologized in its own world. Wolverine says it's all bullshit and fairy tales. But there is a ring of truth to them in a weird way.
I bet they were very nervous about doing that.
Yeah, you think so?
But I think Deadpool really just
allowed them to break open the universe.
He does. Are comics referenced in Deadpool?
I think there's like action figures in Deadpool.
Right. There's a fame element.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Yeah, definitely. And in the sequel, Deadpool 2, there's more. The X-Men are more like world renowned in a weird way. There's newscasters talking about them.
Yeah.
I think they do have a comic book in one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Someone has it in their backpack or something.
Yeah, like in a lot of movies, a lot of other things, like, these heroes are celebrities, you know?
Right, yeah.
The
Marvel movies haven't quite gone there.
But also to connect it to your experience. Like,
yeah.
If you're a kid and you're 7 and you're reading these comics and you see a movie, this seems so real.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Captain America, the comic, is in that first movie.
Right, that's like a propaganda.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, but they actually show the kids reading the original Captain America comic from Marvel. You know.
Fun advertising note. the term public relations was invented because the term propaganda got too like controversial.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, so they like invented, like, let's call it public relations.
No, that's funny. I want to say this. I've been rereading, you know, ever since Stan Lee died, I've just been interested in the original comics. And I bought like the first two Marvel Masterworks of the first.
When did he die?
Like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I bought like the first 20 issues of Fantastic Four and reprints with the original Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, that launched the entire Marvel Universe.
Nice.
And what's fun about them is that they write themselves into the stories. So they're writing the Fantastic Four comics in the comics.
Yeah.
And they collaborate with the Fantastic Four sometimes for new story ideas.
Oh,
and in one issue, Dr. Doom comes and like takes the Marvel headquarters by hostage to like lure the Fantastic Four into a trap. And it's really funny, and it's like, speaking of meta, it's like the only reason I brought it up. Like, wow, that's like.
No, I can imagine, like, sometimes you see the guy drawing it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah, they show Stan and Jack Kirby, you know, like, writing and drawing them. Like,
must have been so fun, especially when that started to make some money.
Yeah. Well, it all ended poorly because they all ended, you know, they all ended up hating each other. No one made much. Stan or Jack didn't really make the money they should have made off of it and everything.
Right. But still, I felt like, there's like day one, and then there's like 3 years in, and they're like,
well, really, the story of it is like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee invented the entire Marvel universe. It was moderately popular at its time for a comic book, but it didn't really blow up until after they were done writing them in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that's when they started fighting over who did what and what credit went where. And when they were doing it, they didn't give a shit so much. They were like, whatever, you know.
Well, I wonder, you know, you hear that kind of thing and you hear people arguing about, like, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
But I wonder, like, how, like 5 years in, like, did they buy a house? You know what I mean? Like,
they made a very upper middle class salary, the two of them. Yeah.
That must have been amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so.
Upper middle class.
Yeah, no, I actually calculated reading those. I calculated in one of those books I read about Jack Kirby, they said what his rate was and what his salary was. And I did like an inflation calculator, and like he was making like 200 grand a year in today's money.
Exactly.
So that's like enough to like be a really successful artist. You know, yeah. I mean, today I would love to make that. So
yeah.
So he was doing well, but like not as well as he should have. He was generating billions of dollars of content.
Like, how fun is it to like draw Wolverine and be like, here's his like weapon gloves, and then like three episodes, 2 years later, like, you know what? Maybe they're not the gloves. Well, maybe it's like you just add to it. Yeah, it's like fun.
I know that's cool. But the problem was that he kept giving them all these free ideas, like creating Galactus, Silver Surfer, X-Men, Fantastic Four, Incredible
Silver
Hulk.
Surfer, that's crazy.
Like, he created all this shit, and it's making the company millions and millions of dollars, and he's getting a small fraction of that.
Yeah.
He's like, why should I keep giving you my free ideas? Mm-hmm. I mean, these great ideas I have. Like, why? What's my incentive to like create more for you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, like, the ultimate Marvel conundrum as far as how they deal with their artists and writers to this day, is that a lot of them are hesitant to give them their best ideas because they'll never own it. Mm-hmm. So, like, why should I create, like, the next Wolverine for you if, like, I'm never going to really get a piece of it? So that was Jack Kirby's problem. So he quit Marvel. He's like, well, fuck you guys. Like, I'm not getting, like, I've created this whole universe for you, and it means nothing. You know, why should I give you my next great idea? Mm-hmm. So the fun aspect of it will die when you like start realizing you're getting screwed. All right, let's try to blast through this movie just to keep talking about more interesting things and get to the end here, because we've been talking quite a long time. They meet this family, the Munson family, on the road.
So the Munsons?
I think they're the Munsons. Yeah.
Why do you know some Munsons?
Doesn't that sound like something?
Kingpin.
Kingpin's the Munson.
Roy Munson.
Oh, wow.
You really Munsoned yourself out of that one. And he's like...
Yeah, Munson. It's like it became like an adjective.
Yeah, in the movie. Yeah, that's a great movie. We got to rewatch Kingpin. One of Bill Murray's finest supporting roles ever. Yeah. Anyway, so the Munsons take them under their wing. They feed them dinner. They're a really nice family. Wolverine gets them all killed tragically. It's brutal.
Yeah.
So sad. Professor X is killed by Wolverine's clone, X-24, which is really tragic way to go. Wolverine's like, it wasn't me. It's like, how do you even explain that to somebody who's bleeding to death in the heart and is already 98 years
old?
That
sucks.
Yeah. It's just like,
that's why I sort of, it wasn't so much the shadow character comes, but then also that character dies.
Right.
And that was such a great, like, grounded force for the whole movie.
It shows, like, Wolverine's endlessly fucked up life.
Hero trigger turns back on and it becomes a regular kind of movie, really.
Yeah, it does. But he's, like, I like seeing his rage after Professor X dies when he has to bury him. Because it's just, like, how many of these people has he buried his life like this? Mm-hmm. And Professor X died in the most punk bullshit way. Like, imagine if, like, a clone of you, George, like, appeared and killed your family and, you know, you had to deal with the consequences of that. That's like, how can you even psychologically, you know, deal with that? You can't. I think that's beyond the pale.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah, right, yeah. And Wolverine's like, only in the top 10 of, like, fucked up things that's happened to him in his life, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, by the time, and he's 109 years old, so it's like, I've had enough of living to an extent.
And that's when he's, like, ready to die.
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
That's when that guy pulled the shotgun on him.
Right.
He's just like, all right.
Yeah, please kill me. But anyway, they get away again. Caliban kills himself. He sacrifices himself. We meet the scientist doctor, who's a big asshole, Xander Rice. Wolverine and Laura escape. After they bury Professor X, she steals another truck. They have to drive to North Dakota to get to this place called Eden. Wolverine's like, he's half dead at this point. His healing factor's just not working anymore like it used to. They meet up with all the other young mutant kids. Somehow, miraculously, they've all escaped from this facility somehow. I don't know how they've all escaped from all these guys with cybernetic arms and machine guns.
I don't know, but I found the kids very cheesy.
Yeah,
they're not that bad, though, in the sense that they're not, like, too much of the focus of the...
Right.
Like, when they're on screen, you don't really see them that much.
I think when I first watched it, I didn't mind them as much the second time. The second time, I'm just like, and then you see, like, when the bad guy, like shoots them or something, I forget exactly, he's like, don't worry, just a flesh wound.
Yeah, yeah, they're not trying to kill
everything
them.
Got really soft.
Yeah. And the one thing I didn't, you know, they hint that this place they're going to might be real as well, which the movie leaves as a mystery.
I don't like that.
I don't understand. I wish they gave us more of, like, are they actually getting to a safe haven?
But yeah, it seems to drift away from the possibility. Remind me what happens with the kids.
They escape in the end to Canada.
Yeah. And there's like a whole chase.
Canada is the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that that's almost like a huge, like, very relevant political statement the movie's making to Americans right now. It's like, get to Canada. That's
well, no, I think it's a relevant thing.
Escape from Mexico, escape from the United States, get to Canada. That's where things are safe and normal.
It's a very modern folklore element of, like right now everyone's, there's not everyone, but there's a ton of people, like, from the South who are trying to get into America. But, like, in America, everyone sort of thinks, like, oh, we're on the top of the mountain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then, like, oh, the mythology of, like, Canada, where, like, free healthcare.
Right, yeah. It's like
less of these problems.
Right, more of, like a liberal paradise, at the least, you know, like.
Right.
So, more European in a way. Yeah.
I just found the kids unconvincing because Laura doesn't speak English for the first, like.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Good big chunk of the movie, which is, like, fine.
Yeah.
But, like, she's a fluent Spanish speaker. English is her second language, and, like, she presents that way. But then all the other kids have a perfect
They're all raised by Mexican nurses.
Exactly. So, like, why does she not speak like them or vice versa?
That's definitely a flaw.
Also, she is a lethal killing machine. She's been trained. She knows exactly what to do. She can take out, like, a whole army of dudes by herself. But all these other kids that were raised in the same facility as her and also have, like, their own specific mutant powers.
They're all well-adjusted.
Yeah, they're, like, not really fighting back that
They're
much.
More American than all. Yeah, that's kind
like,
of...
They seem to me like they, like, can, they
Americanized,
they would, like, host a TV show about science.
Right, yeah, exactly.
On Nickelodeon or something.
Exactly, and, like, I understand that having, like, cold breath isn't, like, the same thing as having, like, spears come out of your hands, but...
But actually,
he does shatter that dude's arm.
I know.
She is kind of the Wolverine, and they're like the Cyclops.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the X-Men. This is the next generation of X-Men. That's what it's all about.
But they're super cheesy.
Yeah, it's lame.
But I guess that's, you know.
That's what the X-Men is to an extent in these movies.
But they could have been interesting, I think. I think that one was a little bit like.
Well, they show that one.
They're all the good nerds.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, you know, like, the Goonies, they got, like, the good nerd. Like, they're all the good nerd.
Right, you're right. It could have been more varied. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. The children
were, like, working together.
Weak spot of the movie.
It's not really Lord of the Flies.
anyway, like, Wolverine's nearly dead. They cut his beard to make him look more like his character. I guess that was important for some reason. I think that was a dumb move, but whatever. Yeah. They also have X-Men comics and X-Men action figures. Someone has a Wolverine action figure, which I thought was kind of cute and funny in a weird way.
Yeah.
But whatever, the kids are cheesy. They're escaping in the woods. They're 8 miles from the border. Wolverine's half dead. Laura's pissed that she's abandoning him at the end. He's like, I got you to the border. Goodbye. But he realizes that the kids are in danger. So he has, luckily, some mutant-like steroids that he takes that allows him to juice up for one last fight. We get one last brutal fight scene in the woods. You know, actually, I thought this whole fight scene was kind of... I feel like the stakes weren't quite as great for some reason. I don't know. It wasn't...
No, I think now we're just in that world where it's like the hero's got to do the hero thing.
Yeah, but it just... Yeah, the climax wasn't... I thought, like, the climax happened earlier with Professor X dying.
I loved when he killed the guy, though, with a gun.
Yeah.
That was cool. The scientist.
Because they shut him up in the middle of his...
He tells the exposition of how they got rid of the mutants, and then he's just like... He's like, so now you're trying to make your own mutants? He's like, yes. What?
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah, that was good. I don't like how the Wolverine clone killed was, like, whatever. It's fine. Right. She shoots him with the adamantium bullet. I still don't get how he wouldn't heal from that. Like, Wolverine can survive an atomic bomb, whatever. That's another story.
Yeah.
He's dead. Good riddance to him. The kids are saved. The Donald Pierce guy gets brutally killed by all the kids.
Yeah.
That's one thing. They all gang up on him and use all their mutant powers at once and kill him very slowly.
That's a little bit odd. Yeah. It's really creepy when, like, good kids do stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this guy definitely deserved it. He was a monster. He was directly involved in their torture. Like, in the scene with the hospital, they showed one kid committing suicide, which is pretty rough.
Yikes. Yeah.
Right? Like, that was insane. But anyway, Wolverine is impaled on a wooden tree log, which is brutal looking. It's a pretty satisfying death.
But he took a drug to give him, like,
some
energy. What was that drug again?
It was like a mutant energy drug. It reinvigorated his strength and his healing factor briefly. Mm-hmm. But it wore off quickly. The characters make a point saying, oh, where's up quick, Mutie? So it's worn off. He's been shot and stabbed too many times. Now he's been impaled on a large wooden stump. And it looks terrible. I mean, in the sense of just, like, how bad it looks.
Makeup's so good now. He totally looked, like, old and destroyed.
Yeah, he looked completely finished. And he's happy at the brief moment. He's like, oh, this is what it feels like. I guess they're alluding to the fact that she calls him daddy, which is
100%
makes you like well up a little bit.
They're alluding to it.
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe he was saying this is what it feels like. This is what it feels like to die finally because I've been living.
And I did sort of think that too.
Like relief,
yeah.
But I think it's more about the dad thing,
right? Yeah,
it's like the intimacy of vulnerability and
right,
like real family.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that's like not necessarily true to the character because technically Wolverine's had a bunch of daughter apprentices throughout his run. Be it Kitty Pride or Jubilee, you know, it's
Maybe you're right then. Maybe it is a little bit more about the death.
Yeah. It, you know, he really tried to keep his distance from this little girl. I think he was more weirded out by the fact that she was his clone. He never really felt like, I love you as my daughter.
Yeah, you're right.
He's more like, this is such a strange, I can't deal with all these strange life circumstances of mine. They're just piling up too much. I can't deal. It's like, he's like disgusted by what his life has become. Like, they've cloned him twice. You know, he's had to, like, kill Jean Grey. He's had to, like, save the world 50 times, time travel.
All he wants to do is drive his limo.
Yeah, he just wants to die, you know. So he does die.
See some boobs every now and then.
Yeah. Laura, you know, wear eyeglasses with the receipt still on them or the tag. I just had to put it in there. Laura gives a speech from Shane, which is pretty emotional and pretty dead on. And then he's got the cross, like, buried in the ground, and she fixes it to an X, which is actually really bad. That's a great way to end the movie. I thought that was a wonderful imagery. Mm-hmm. Like, well-earned. It's comic booky, you know, but it's well-earned in the context of this film and, like, a nice reminder that the X-Men are cool. And
well, like, the Jesus thing, too, is always, like, that is the sacrifice, the person who sacrifices himself. And so, like, you look at that, and I think it's sort of like
this is a Christ
in a way that's sort of like a cliche and cheesy. Yeah. And so they turn it to it in terms of like the film thing.
Yeah,
like they turn it to an X, which isn't less cheesy.
Yeah,
but it's like it's attacking the cliche of the film cliche.
Yes, I agree with that, and I also think it's subtly punk rock, to use another phrase, in a way too, because the X-Men aren't about like religion and Christianity. They're kind of
they kind of are.
Sometimes they are.
Right, yeah, that's true. Like, there's characters who are religious. Like,
but it's there's definitely, like, a symbolic nature of, like...
They're their own community of people that are, you know, like, they're their own religion. Yeah, yeah. You know, to be a mutant is to be, like, cast off into the society.
But, like, persecution
of right.
groups is a huge thing.
Yeah, so to, like, turn, like, a religious symbol into, like, no, we're, like, ex-people and we're our own... I think that was actually a nice little, like, symbolism there that's very comic booky.
I can see a lot of people not liking it.
Yeah, well, that's what I like punk rock about it. So that's the movie Logan. I want to ask what we've been doing with these X-Men movies is rating them out of 6 Wolverine claws, stupidly. And you could rate them by half claws as well. So, Sonya, I'll start with you. How many?
6 out of 6.
All right, yeah. Any final statements about its quality? I just want to hear, like, brief sum up, too, as well.
I like the agency that they give to the Laura character. There's so many moments in the movie where she, like, gets shot and she, like, sucks the bullet out of her arm and spits it out, and it's just like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's only, great. Like, burly dudes used to be able to do stuff like that.
Right, they really...
Now she gets to do it.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
They flipped the script on the whole... all those tropes there.
Yeah.
A little girl being that crazy.
I enjoy...
Well, they did do that in Kick-Ass.
It kind of reminded me of Yoda in a weird way.
Better than Yoda, though.
Definitely better. But then hearing it and like thinking about it, like there's definitely...
It looks like that.
Phantom Menace, when you finally saw Yoda do like flips and things like
sorry,
that.
George, Attack of the Clones, supposed
to... Was that Attack of the Clones?
Yeah. Your entire credentials are out the window.
Is that the third one or the second one?
That's the second one.
Right.
No,
he didn't fight in the first one?
No, he did. Yeah. He's a puppet in the first one.
Really?
And then they decided to make him CGI in the second one, and then he went back and made him CGI in the DVD. He didn't like that it was a puppet. It was stupid. And then they made him a puppet again in The Last Jedi. They can't figure it out. Anyway, Sonya, I'm sorry to interrupt. Any other things you were going to say?
And also, I like the characterization of Professor X as, like, a really old dude. It never occurred to me before that, like, your mutant powers might start going crazy when you get old.
Yeah, that's the thing we didn't talk about.
Perfect sense.
That's great.
You know, that's really cool. And also that
it's terrifying.
Like, and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But also that he kind of remains, like, leader of the pack, even though he's, like, going a little bit crazy and stuff. Like, you know, like, Wolverine doesn't want to stay at that nice farmhouse out in the country. He wants to get going. But Professor X wants to stay, so he's like, alright, yeah, we'll stay. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, he has to listen to him.
He still listens to him, even though he's, like, half crazy. And,
yeah.
But, you know, it's, like, his reason for living, so...
Oh, and that, like, death scene, nice. Where Wolverine buries him, he's like, well, there's some water nearby. Because yeah. They wanted to be on the boat. It's, like, really sad.
Yeah, super sad. Yeah. So, anyway, hit some emotional notes.
Okay.
Good characterization.
So 6 out of 6 claws.
6 out of 6 claws. Right,
George, I'll take it to you.
I'll go 6 out of 6 claws, too. But a lot of that, too, is just because, like, I don't say the, I don't know if there's a better word for it, but benefit of the doubt. I get the impression that there's some real geniuses juggling a lot of things.
Right.
And I think they did a really great job trying to appease everybody.
Yeah.
And I've seen people try those kind of things before, and I don't like it, and I felt like this was, like,
they did the best
they
could.
Nothing was off,
right?
From what I could tell, and I could tell there's a lot more going on than I could see,
and, right?
And with that, there's so many great positives. So I think throughout, even if the kids are nerdy, I like that they torture that guy because right. If they weren't nerdy, it would be less surprising,
right? Right.
So it's like there's a lot of balance to this script, and the execution is really obviously dead on. I was thinking too, it's like film. The reason you have film is like film is a really good empathy machine. And then outside of, like, its purpose for that, it's to make you feel, like, the way they do that is to make you feel like you're there. Like, it's like, that's the craft of film is to make you feel like you're there and with the goal of creating empathy for a character. And I think in those two things, considering Wolverine is a superhero or whatever, I think that's exceptional, you know? I think they totally did that. Within the confines of this Marvel universe. And
very well said.
Film structure.
So 6 out of 6 claws?
6 out of 6 claws.
Very good. I also will give it a 6 out of 6 claws. Welcome to the Adamantium Claws Club. Logan, you're the most perfect movie we have reviewed of all the X-Men cinematic films. Awesome. Appropriates the last one of the 20th Century's Fox universe. They really knocked it out of the park. Well, I guess Deadpool 2 is the last one up to this point.
So what's the future?
Well, Disney bought the entire franchise. So I get the people are worried legitimately that they'll never have a movie like this again. That when Wolverine's in the hands of Disney, they're not going to make him into a... They're not going to show this level of blood or gore again at the very least.
Well, did they do Deadpool 2? They didn't do Deadpool 2.
No, Disney didn't. No, still Fox. So, yeah, so if people are worried that, like, Logan's going to be this one-off, like, unique experience, and Wolverine going forward will be lame, you know, he'll be, like, censored. I mean, but we've already seen it before with Hugh Jackman censored when the original Fox X-Men movies, and it still worked to an extent.
Well, I think there's just been this
bloodless
evolution.
Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of things from my perspective that sort of seemed like a duplicate. I'm sure if I dove in and watched them more carefully, they'd see, like, the growths or whatever, but there's definitely, like, X-Men 1... Then the complication of the universe being built, and then, like, the awareness of, like, Deadpool and Logan sort of taking over. But from then on, it seems like they could... Like, is it tacky to do, like, real versions of other things? I don't think it is. I think it's just sort of, like, the... Like, honestly, it's also not that strange, because Batman really did it already.
Yeah.
Like, they really humanized him really hard.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Like, Batman Begins and stuff.
Yeah.
I went the opposite direction for some reason.
I would like a more... Speaking in general about the future of X-Men movies, there needs to be... Someone has to have a vision, a stylized vision, that turns the comic books into a form of pop art that we've never seen before. And I think the X-Men are the perfect franchise to do it, because they wear colorful costumes. They're like a motley group of random characters. Each character on his own could be a movie. Nightcrawler could be a movie.
Definitely.
He's like a blue and black, red character. It's really cool to look at. You know, they all have amazing character colors and unique powers and unique backstories. So to mush them all together in a film called X-Men, there needs to be some kind of, like, grand pop art vision that we, like, the likes of which we haven't seen before in a comic book movie. And I'm looking forward to that. I think that's, I have a sense that that's the only way they're gonna do it too. They're gonna have to, like, just come at it with a new angle and a new color palette, you know?
I didn't honestly, know that there was, like, this big transition. So the same thing happened with Star Wars, right?
Yeah, and it's similar. Well, Star Wars are trying to, they're carrying on the continuity of George Lucas's thing. I think when X-Men come into the Disney MCU world with Tony Stark and Iron Man, it's going to be brand new. They're going to say 20th Century Fox never existed. This is Marvel doing X-Men like you've never seen, in the same way they did with Spider-Man when they acquired, you know, went to partnership with Sony. The new character, it's no Andrew Garfield, it's not Tobey Maguire. Those movies never happened. It's like now it's a brand new universe and it's in our hands. We're gonna be really careful with it. So I think they'll do that with X-Men because I think they know what they have as a property, what they have is really special. But there's going to be limitations because Disney is a bullshit vanilla company, right? So they're going to soften the edges of Wolverine's claws is really what it comes down to. So we'll see. You know, it could be good. It could be bad. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think it might. I think maybe the future is in good television shows. Because
X-Men lends itself to TV way better than anything.
There seems to be, I didn't watch the Daredevil series or anything, but there's just a lot more freedom to have to like connect to. You don't with film, you just need to connect to the biggest audience possible because everyone else is, and they find, and they soften all those edges so they can have more and more people in the theaters.
Right. And, well, the Netflix Marvel shows are super violent. They're as violent as Logan. They just can't curse, which I think is like
weird. They can't curse.
Yeah, the Disney vacation is like they can't say fuck. They can say shit very minimally, but the violence is absurdly gory and violent, bloody. Yeah. I mean, so that's we'll see.
I always love those conversations when people talk about like what's violence and what's not violence when it comes down to it. I really don't know how to sum it up.
Well, that's a good topic for maybe perhaps a future episode.
Yes.
And if we're talking about the future, like I said, this is the last X-Men specific content episode, but we're going to carry on with The Amazing World of Spider-Man, the animated series. So in case you think this is our last episode, it isn't. There'll be many more. Sonia is grimacing as we speak.
She has no idea. It's never to end.
Yeah. So in that context, George, I'd love to invite you back one day for the future of Spider-Man, either a movie or a cartoon, whatever you feel you want to do. And as far as the X-Men go, when there's new X-Men movies, we'll talk about them. You know,
Well, I really enjoyed this one, actually. I think with the X-Men cartoon, I felt like a little bit like, I was just so sidetracked by the Terminator. And it was just me wanting to talk about movies.
Well, don't feel bad. That's like you were in the original first 10 episodes when all of us had no idea what we were doing. And not saying, and I haven't listened to that episode, but I'm just saying, like, we're all in the groove now. This was an incredible conversation.
How many really episodes? Enjoyed it.
This is like close to 100 total.
What if it was 100 right here? Who knows?
I'm not sure. It could be.
Well, I guess we'll never know.
Because we didn't count the bonus episodes and we didn't count the movies as part of the sequencing. Because we wanted to have only the episodes numbered. But, this could be close to 100. So we're getting there anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So thank you for joining us on this very special episode.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah. And a reminder to our fans, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Search us out there. You can talk to us and rate and review the podcast 5 stars. George, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Or
I'd like to plug Terminator 2 is out on Blu-ray now. And check that out.
All right. George Gross, everyone, thank you so much for coming. Sonia, do you have any final words?
Good night, film fans.
Good night, fuckers. Disney fuckers.